course, very big welcome to everybody who's listening on peoplesinternetradio.com and scotlandisfree.ning.com. We've got a chat box over here if anybody wants to come and join in. I'm sure you'll find the people at the gate very friendly. I'm going to say hello to all the people in the chat box, actually, because I haven't done that for quite a long time. It's very good to see Annie up at the top of the list. Hi, Annie. Welcome to the chat box. Bonnie's in there, and bye, Paul. Hi to you both. Hi to Chug. Comet Flash, Dr. Rock, whoever he is, Ian Alone, hi there Ian, how you doing? And Fairport, hi Fairport, Free Willy, Jay, hi to both of you. Hi to the Johnny Meath and John Bravo and John McHugh, lots of Johns in here, it's a bit of a John's club. Just Billy, Mahatma Coates, hi there Mahatma, sure we'll be giving something of yours a spin later on. Main Admin, Nicky Butler, Nick Nomic, hi there Nick, and Noel Overteen and Reverend Rashers, RJS1. Rob Freeman's in there with us. Oh, he was. Yeah, he is. Hi there, Rob. How you doing, mate? We'll be getting onto your stuff in a minute. Sean Maguire, my old mate Sean, I'll take it. We'll be seeing you over here as well for some of that Unity stuff, hopefully, Sean. It was good fun last time, mate. Hi to Sol. And Stuart and Super Big Bad Man. Hi, Super Big Bad Man. Another cool voice like that. Tony, UK Prepper, who's been doing so much work to keep the whole thing kind of rolling recently. And, of course, Vibe. Hi there, Vibe. So, tonight's show, really, I want to spend listening to some more Rob Freeman, who, as I say, has joined us in the chat box, which is great. Always nice to see him there, so you can ask questions. There's about 90 minutes of it in all, but it's there's a little bit of a break in the middle for some tunes, and I don't think it really needs too much more introduction from me, really, because, as usual, this one speaks pretty much for itself. Here we go. A chat I had, the last 5 or 6 days or so with Rob, and I think there's probably going to be more where this comes from, so I hope you enjoy it. Here it is.
Dr. Rock, good evening. How the devil are you? You okay?
I'm very well indeed, thank you very much. As I said earlier, a little bit damp around the edges and slightly muddy. It's been a really vile day here. Even by Welsh standards, it's been pretty bloody wet. It's amazing, really.
Yeah, it's the same here, so I think everywhere's flooded here, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Sorry about that. It sounds like it's been raining quite solidly everywhere. So we might as well get stuck in, mightn't we? Being as I think we've got a fair amount of stuff that we want to try and cover tonight.
Yep.
I'd like to return to start with to the business of recording your machine as owned by a private trust. Because there's one or two questions that have arisen since I spoke about it last, and we didn't quite deal with some of the more, perhaps one of the more challenging parts of it. Could you just remind us of the methods used to prevent yourself, to remove yourself from being a registered keeper and becoming effectively an owner in trust of the machine, so that anybody that wasn't here last time can catch up with us?
I'll tell you what I did. I've been doing this quite a while, but I've found some more information now that we can add to this. So the stuff I've been doing, is my sound all right, by the way?
Yeah, it's looking good to me. Let us know in the chat box if you can hear us both well. That would be great, thanks.
Yeah, the reason I'm asking is, as you rightly said, everything just crashed about 4 or 5 minutes ago, so yeah. So everything I've been doing with vehicles, nobody's been able to teach me anything, because I've been at this for a good 6 years now, so I just did it by trial and error. So what I realised from I'm going to try very hard not to repeat the stuff I said last time, because it was quite a long show, weren't it? So I'll try not to go over old ground, but I purposely tried vehicles. I parked them outside my house with no tax on and stuff, and no insurance, and just to see what I could try and get away with. And everything I do, I try and push it right to the limit. Because I'm never going to know if I'm fearful. I've either got to, I'm not one of these doctors, dip my feet in the water, I just dive in. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. And because I have done it, and because I've kind of suffered a little bit, I've learned stuff that we would never be able to get. I don't know anybody else who's got some of this information. And like I said last week, it's not because I'm clever or anything. It's because if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it, because I'm not fearful. And so I started experimenting, looking at all the legislation and stuff like you do. And then I parked, I purposely, what I do is, I've got two friends who own a car pitch, and they sell me cars worth about 700-800 quid. They sell them for about 300-400 quid. So, not worrying too much if I lose. I've lost two cars and kept five now through trial and error and experimenting. So anyway, basically, I get a car. This is before I knew what to do. It's no tax on it. I think the neighbour grassed me up. One of my neighbours, they don't like it, do they? And so I kept getting clamped by DVLA outside my house. And then I'd ring my mate up, and he'd bring electric chainsaw, put it through my window, and I kept chopping them off and then moving car. I think I've chopped five clamps off altogether. But the last one was the best one, because what happened was I kept chopping them off, and then I thought, well, I'm going to park on my next street here. This is no good. So I parked on my next street, a two-minute walk, and it got clamped again. I thought, bloody hell. So for me, mate, this time I'm walking down a public street, though, with a petrol-driven chainsaw, and I chop it off again, stick it in my boot, and take it away. But as I chopped it off, a group of people had just wondered, it took me about 10 minutes. People ended up pulling over in vans and cars. There were a group of about 12 people saying, what's he doing? And my mate says, oh, he's getting rid of clam. So that kind of waking people up. Anyway, they all clapped, and I took a bow and everything. walking about like, is it Jason off them horror movies? I looked a right freak. But this is what I'm saying. I've gone to the limit with it all. Anyway, cut a long story short, every time I got clamped, they kept putting a red card on my car, like a sticker. It went like a sticker, probably about the size of a really large envelope, probably about half that size. And it's in red, subliminal. And I kept reading it, and this is the point to the registration bit, what finally did it for me. I keep reading it, and I've got a friend called Rob, he's called Rob as well. And it dawned on me when I read it, and my mate Rob come, and I went, because everybody just laughs, you know, my mates keep laughing at things I do, and I said, Rob, read that, and he read it, and I said, and it said, Doc, I think I've mentioned this before, it said, all vehicles registered in the UK must have a valid tax test and insurance. So, blah, blah, blah. So I said, Rob, read it, and then he read it. And it took four times of him reading it before he saw what I saw. And I said, what does it say to him? He kept saying, well, you've got to register your vehicle. I went, no, read it again. This is how clever they're spelling his dog. And he read it. And on the fourth time he read it, he went, oh, my God, I see what you're saying. And what it said, though, but you don't see it, you see, until you are, you awake to a certain level. And it said, every vehicle registered in the UK must have a valid test and insurance. And I said, and my mate went, oh no, every vehicle registered in the UK, it's not saying you have to have a vehicle registered in the UK. It's saying they can only act, if you read between the lines and the words, they can only take action upon a vehicle that is registered in the UK. So every vehicle registered in the UK must have a valid test and insurance. It doesn't say that you have to register a vehicle.
It's clever, it's clever, isn't it, how they hide this stuff in plain sight for us.
Oh, to be honest, Doc, before we, just when the end game comes, just before we string them up, I'll shake hands with them and say, fair play, you were fantastic opponents, but get off our planet now. But yeah, super intelligent, super wordsmith, mate, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, so based on that, what happened? Oh, yeah, and cleverly, I've got a little lane, an unadopted lane around the back of my house, that same day when I walked around with that chainsaw. And then a couple of hours later, I think my neighbour grassed me up. I parked it on this unadopted lane round back, and the DVLA van was there, and I was just walking up to my car, and I could see him reversing. Four big thugs in a car had come, and because it was on a private unadopted road, they couldn't clamp it anymore. And I was laughing my head off, and you could see they were gutted. So that were interesting. That's an interesting bit.
That's good, that is. What did they do about the fact that you keep trashing their clamps then? Because they're pretty expensive pieces of tackle, aren't they, really? How did they respond to that?
They sent me a bill for 80 quid.
I can imagine what you did with that, mate.
Well, what I did is I just sent them a bill back for putting the clamp on in the first place. I times everything by 10. So I sent them a bill for 800 quid and said, you know, bid up the 80 quid off and send me the remainder. So you can just do what they do. That's my whole thing, is mirroring things back. Yeah, so I just sent them a bill. Somebody in the chat room saying, nice Yorkshire accent. Oh, it's Jaffa. Yeah, thanks, mate. that's the point. Can they understand my accent? Because I presume most people are from Scotland, are they?
I think you're pretty clear. I think you're pretty clear, Rob. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to try and slow down with my speech because I tend to get excited and talk too fast. I'm labouring this on. I'm going to get a move on. Am I rattling on too much, Doc?
Yeah, no, it's cool. It's good to have the background to it. If nothing else, it's because it does seem to be a particularly effective method that we're talking about. And let's face it, the registration, taxing, MOTing and insuring of rude machines is something that really affects us all, and something we have been seeking pretty much ineffectively a solution to for some time. So yeah, I think it's worth catching up on, mate.
Okay, thanks. Okay, so I got that they can only act on registered vehicles. So that was the first step to the process. So I knew that for sure. But then what I realised is, hang on a minute, if a car's registered, excuse me, I've got a bit of wind there. If your car's registered, you can't deregister it. It's very, in fact, I don't know anybody who's successfully managed to deregister it, and that's because it's still in their system. They'll only allow deregistration of, of like cars over a certain age or whatever, certain classes of, I don't know, motor vehicles they call it. But it's almost impossible, I would say, to deregister. And so I still didn't have a solution that I could help people or myself with, because I understood that they can only act on a registered vehicle, but I thought, well, how the hell do you deregister it, which is the point to this section. And so what happened was, just by pure chance, I did a talk in Derbyshire about trusts, and we had an argument with the management, and they were trying to charge us £13 extra for the room for an hour that we'd not had. So like idiots, the manager just went mad, and I said to her, there were only four of us left who organised it, and I said, shall we just give them the £13? And they all went, no, we've not had it, we shouldn't do it. So the manager said, I'm calling the police. And he says, well, do what you want, it's a civil matter. Cut long story short, we were stood outside having a fag for an hour. We waited an hour for them. Two coppers come, and they said, there's been a dispute. I says, it's a civil matter, mate, there's no problem. And he said, look, he says, I need all you four, I need all your details. And I whispered to the other, I don't give my details. And so the other three did. And he said, yeah, I want your details. And I said, well, I'm not, I'm not obliged to give you my details. I said, has a crime been committed? He says, well, I don't know yet. He's not gone in. I says, well, if you want to go in, speak to the manageress, come out. I said, if you establish a crime has been committed, I says, I will give you my details then. But until that point, I says, I'm under no obligation to even speak to you. So he went in, came out 5 minutes later, over £13. He went, now let's drop it. And, okay, so fair enough. And I said, so no one's going to get arrested. Oh, he said, if you don't give me details, I'm going to arrest you. And I said, what for? He said, not give me details. I said, you can't. I says, there's been no crime committed. There's not even been an offence committed. It's a civil matter over £13. Now, if you go in and come out and you decide, I said, you better be able to back it up if you are going to arrest me. And of course, they didn't like it. So what happened was, he says, yeah, everyone's free to go. Yeah, no problems, no arrest, no. I was the last one to leave, and I was going a couple of junctions down the motorway to the service station. And what happened was, just as I was getting to the slip road, they parked up, this man and woman in this big van. And I thought, hello. As I went past them, they followed me. And then, it was only 2.5 miles down the motorway. As I just before I turned into the services, 2.5 miles down, that van and three other cars boxed me in. I think it's called a T-manoeuvre. And as I pulled into the car park, I got out of my car immediately, because it was now in a service station, and locked it, and eight of them dived on me instantly and cuffed me. And this were all to teach me a lesson for not giving me details outside that hotel a bit earlier at that talk.
And getting out of the car and locking it is a good idea, isn't it?
Well, I've since learnt that you're supposed to stay in your car and wind the window down and talk to them through it, but of course I didn't know. This is probably about 2 years ago now. I didn't know, and I thought, well, it's on private land, or I thought it was private land, and I locked it up. And all I said is, that car is tax accessibly insured, which it was. That's all I managed to say, and then they sort of dived on me. And they roughed me up, kept my arms in the air for about 20 minutes, pretending to search me, and sort of roughed me up and stuff. Anyway, cut long story short, three days in Nick and stuff, and I managed to get out, and we can talk about, that sort of stuff after.
Yeah.
But the mistake they made is, one of the coppers says, he says, your car's coming up as unregistered.
Aha.
And then I sat in my cell, obviously, with the emotion of it all, I didn't think, but 12 hours in cell, and it was like another light bulb going off, Doc. I thought, boom, got it. It's coming back as unregistered. Okay, just as I was leaving the police station, I says, what's happened to my car? They said, we've impounded it and crushed it for no insurance. They said it got no insurance, but it had it. We're on a trader's policy. Anyway, the car was parked up for 7 days in that service station. I rang the service station 3 days after and said, look, my car's broke down. Will it be all right? And the woman says, yeah, but DVLA are in charge of our car park, and they've put a ticket on it. I says, that's no problem. Anyway, when I got there, dog, so the police had lied, it wasn't impounded. But when I got there, the ticket from DVLA had been taken off. There was no ticket on it. So what I had established through 3 days in the nick, and being arrested and roughed up, all from a talk, not to do with vehicles, is that they can't take action on an unregistered vehicle. Neither could DVLA, because they took that ticket back off again. Can you see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, it's very good that. It's also quite interesting that they don't seem to be able to touch it on an unadopted road as well, because presumably it's out of their jurisdiction, is it?
Absolutely. And so what we are establishing here is that when you register a vehicle, it becomes a commercial entity, and on the public highway, they act on it commercially. But the crux of it is how did I manage to unregister it? That's what I'm coming to. And because of my two friends who have these car picks, they sell me the car, they fill their bit in on the slip, to release all connection with that vehicle. I pay them the money, a bit of sales, no problem. But the little slip that the next register keeper has to fill in, I don't fill that in. Okay. So in effect, they've relinquished their connection with it, but I've not voluntary, and it's all voluntary, I've not voluntarily re-registered it in my name, so it's become unregistered. Yeah?
Yeah.
Now, at that stage, they put it on a trader's policy for me. So what I've learned is, you know, when you talk about car, there's a slight bit of noise there. I don't know what that is. Can you hear that?
I can't hear it. No, it's okay. All, you're good and clear here.
What was I saying? I've lost it now.
You were saying that you insured it on a trader's policy.
Okay, yeah. What I realise about car insurance is, as long as the my own philosophy is, as long as the vehicle's insured, they can't take it away. Now, me as a driver, I don't care what they do to me. So the vehicle is insured, but I'm not insured. Now, I'm not a person. I'm a living, sentient being, a sovereign. I don't have to be insured. It's the vehicle that gets insured, not me. Okay?
Yeah.
Sounds confusing, but it's not. So what I realised is, when it's unregistered, they can't take action. Okay, so I carried on driving that car for ages as well, and they never stopped me.
So what can we... excuse me, folks. Can we... what is this trader's policy, then? What's the business there?
Well, I've actually got my own trader's policy now. All it is I'm a part-time car dealer. And all it is, as a part-time car dealer, for instance, I think you have to have 5 vehicles named, the registration numbers named. Yeah?
Yeah.
And what it is, they're put onto that trader's policy, an insured third party, just the vehicle, for purposes of moving it around, taking it to customers or parking it up on, you know, driving on roads and picking up and delivering. So that's how I'm covered. That's how the vehicle itself's covered, yeah?
Very good.
For me personally. Anybody can do it as well. And obviously, the other registration numbers may come off and may come on, but the one I want to travel around in, it stays on the trader's policy. So in effect, the vessel, the vehicle, whatever you want to call it, is insured. Now, I don't need to insure myself for the vehicle to be insured. Can you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If I'm in a car accident and I get whiplash, or if I hurt somebody, they'll take out a private prosecution or whatever it is against me anyway. It's the vehicle that's insured, isn't it? Not the actual human being, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, I seem to be labouring this, don't I? And so what I realised is unregistered. So what I kept doing is usually I swap my cars every 6 months, 12 months anyway, and just keep doing the same deal. But I've got 3 friends, and they said, well, we want to keep our cars. It's all right for you, because when you don't fill the slip in and stuff, it's unregistered. You can keep swapping your vehicles, but what if you want to keep your car? And this is what did it. So what I realised is that the first and most important part is it's unregistered. Excuse me. So I said to my mates, don't try vehicles because they're all over you. It's one of the biggest earners, and they said, we want to do it. So they did. And what they did is you set up a private family trust. Okay, now, I'm not an expert on trust, but I've got a fair bit of knowledge. If you want to set a trust up, as long as it's not to do with land and property, it doesn't have to be written down. It doesn't have to be on paper. Yourself, me and somebody else or whatever can set a trust up right now, verbally. It doesn't have to be written down. So what these people did, jump in, Doc, if I'm rattling on too much.
Yeah, no.
Okay, what these people did is, let's say my mate, Dave Smith. Dave Smith was a registered keeper of the car. Okay, what he did is, he set up a family trust, a Smith Family Trust. Okay, not on paper or anything, just verbally. He then sold the car, Dave Smith sold the car to the Smith Family Trust. He then filled the documentation into DVLA saying that Dave Smith's no longer the register keeper, I've sold it, and I sold it to the Smith Family Trust. And he got notification back a couple of weeks later saying, yep, you're no longer the registered keeper, yeah?
Yep.
Okay, the Smith Family Trust, briefly, I have to say quickly, there's three parts, three main parts to a trust. A trustee, a beneficiary for who it was set up, and an administrator or executor type person that controls the whole trust. Okay?
Yeah.
That's very, very basically sort of thing. So the Smith Family Trust now own the car. Now, when it's held in trust, it's almost impossible for it to be taken away because it's held in trust. For lots of reasons that I won't have time to go into, but trust me, yeah. If it's in a trust, this is what all the wealthy people do, they put stuff in a trust, as you probably know, so it protects it. Okay, so the general executor, or the, let's call it the administrator of the trust, yeah, now, he does all the paperwork, the administration for the trust. Once the vehicle's bought, he then, main thing to remember, never register, because as we know, we split the title and give the main title away. Never register, but always record. So what the administrator did, through my directions, is the administrator wrote to DVLA and said, the Smith Family Trust is now the outright owner of vehicle, blah, 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 registration, rah, rah, rah. For your files, record it accordingly, basically. And any communication from yourselves from now on must be made to the administrator of the Smith Family Trust, who is Dave Smith.
Yeah.
The very one that sold it to the trust. Dave Smith then goes and insures the car, under as he would normally, because he's administrator of the trust, and that's how it worked. And thus, it's now unregistered, because they never filled that extra slip in, but they've recorded the details for DVLA and police purposes.
So if this is a kind of verbal trust and nobody's allowed to look into it because it's a private trust, do you actually need to have the three people agreeing?
You don't. You could make it up. But it's actually, believe it or not, from a metaphysical point of view, it's better to act in honour than dishonour, because it always, if you act in dishonour and try and cheat, it always comes back to bite your own arse. And what I've decided is, because three or four of us have done it, we've all done a verbal trust between us and acted as if it is. And I think, I know it sounds a bit crazy, but if you do act in honour and try your best, it always works out for you every time.
After all you've got to do is talk to them about it, isn't it?
That's all you've got to do. It's not even got to be written down. All you've got to do is inform them that there is a trust. Now, the onus is on them to disprove that a trust exists. Well, they can't, because it's a private trust. They can't get into your trust. The only time it needs writing down is when it's land and property. So that's the basis of it, yeah? And I'll not labour on too much on this, but I've now found some information about vehicle registration, and this is good. This is stuff I'm looking at the moment, and this is brilliant stuff. I'll just give you a brief. Okay, what happened is there's no actual obligation for you to register your vehicle. Believe it or not, it's all by consent. And I can send people this. I've got some legislation. Okay, it's American. I've not found the English equivalent yet, but it's going to work the same. You can class it as a carriage, right? Okay. If you talk about it as a carriage, it's classed as a family or household article. Okay, not every car is a motor vehicle. It may fit under the descriptions of the Motor Vehicle Act or Road Traffic Act, but by us, and you can do this through a trust group to carry more weight, if you express that the carriage that you're travelling in, that members of the trust are travelling in, and this is, I've got all the case laws, if anybody wants this, I'll send it to them. If you class it as a carriage, it's classed as a family or household article. Okay, thus taking it away from being a motor vehicle. Now, the classification of it is when it comes away from motor vehicle, and it's only classed as motor vehicle by our ignorance and our consent,
yeah.
Our implied consent, because we don't know. And I can send anybody this. It's classed as a consumer good. Okay, your car. And you can call it a car, but you can call it an automobile, but you can call it a carriage. It's, as long as you call it private, it's classed as a consumer good. Now, this has massive implications, because It doesn't fall under the remit of motor vehicle. Thus, it's unregistered and it's not a motor vehicle. Now, technically, you shouldn't have to pay tax, test or insurance for that, because it's classed, and it's, I've got the case law, it's classed as a consumer good or a family or household article. Now, just last bit on this, it's not boring, is it, Doctor?
No, it's good. It's good to have the word carriage, because, you know, we realise that many of the words we use accidentally drop us in it, and knowing what we can safely call things is always helpful, I think, isn't it?
It is, and I've only come across this quite recently, and because it's classed as a consumer good, and it's classed as a family or, again, family trust, a family or household article, I'm looking at ways, and I know it can be done, is why can it not be insured as a household article or a consumer good? What it's doing this, what this does is, remember we had a bit of a glitch on the insurance last time, you kindly invited me onto your show, and it's because I wanted to tell you this, but I didn't have it in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm saying is, if we take it away from as a private trust, unregister it, record it,
yeah,
take it away from being a motor vehicle, put it as a household article or a consumer good, and there's no reason why we can't add it to our house insurance. And that's
right.
The point you're getting to, yeah?
Mm. Yeah, because that's important, because one of the things, because I really like the idea of this plan. It sounds like a great one to try, but 9 times out of 10, it seems to me, when people get stopped for the threesome, you know, no tax, no insurance, no MOT, by the time it gets to court, it's generally just no insurance. And it seems to me that quite often in your insurance, in a motor insurance policy anyway, it becomes void if you have any kind of accident and you haven't got the vehicle tested. So whilst the method of putting it in a trust and stuff will, I would imagine, most certainly enable you to get rid of the tax, you don't really want to get rid of the insurance, because, as you say, you don't want to be running the risk of harming people and not being able to cover it. But it might be difficult to stop having it MOT'd, and this is presumably a way around that, is it?
Well, the MOT, when you look into it properly, only shows that it's safe, road safe, for that particular day. It's not worth the paper. It's not written on, hold on, if you're not, it's written on paper nowadays. It's only showing an MOT is another scam for money and another method of oppression. It only shows that it's roadworthy for that particular day. Can you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I can. Yeah, the insurance companies don't seem to recognise it that way, though, do they? Am I right in thinking that the insurance often becomes void if you're not carrying a current MOT?
Sorry, mate, go on.
No, am I right in that, or is it just something I've taken on that isn't correct?
I think it's absolutely bollocks. I think it's total bollocks, because you can insure anything. You can insure a farm vehicle. You can insure anything. Again, it comes under, it's because it's motor vehicle. And what I found out with this stuff I've got here is, and this is really interesting, is that when you insure a car as under the Motor Vehicle Act or whatever it is, it automatically becomes a marine vessel. I know, unbelievable. By submitting to insure it as a motor vehicle, you're consenting that it's a marine vessel. Marine as in Admiralty Maritime Law.
Yeah.
That's how this stitches up, mate. Now, when you insure it under the Motor Vehicle Act, then you can't get away with tax and tests. You will get parking tickets, you know, you will get done for speeding and all that sort of bollocks. Because we are voluntarily consenting by insuring it under the Motor Vehicle Act, or it might be road traffic. No, it's a motor vehicle, I think. Or it might be road traffic act, but classification as a motor vehicle, you are automatically consenting that it's a marine vessel, thus subject to Admiralty Maritime Law.
Well, I didn't know that. I should have suspected it, I suppose, but I didn't know that. No, that's great. Just to bring old, as you know, I like to bring Truth Juice Dave up a lot, because he tells me a lot of interesting stuff, and he's working along similar lines, but without the trust. He's trying to get rid of the light goods classification and just insure it, just treat it as a private carriage, as it were. And he was telling me that he got a machine off a guy, who obviously sent off the, you know, the bit of the document that he had to send off, and then Dave kind of, Dave doctored all the documents the way he wanted them, and he sent them off, and obviously he didn't want to give them his straw party name, and gave them whatever details he wanted to give them. And they actually, I don't know whether you heard this, they actually tried to, they were offering to fine the guy that sold him the car £80 for not providing them with Dave's details. What do you think of that?
I know, yeah, Dave sent me the documentation because he's a good friend of mine, unbelievable, yeah. Isn't it? Dave's doing some fantastic work, as you know, but this is what I'm saying, there's more than one way to skin a car. And everybody's trying different things now, and we will crack the driving and roads and stuff like that. We will get to the bottom of this. But the mortgages and houses, is proving to be the most difficult, and then the next one is vehicles. And it's anything that you register, obviously, is the kidnapping of children. And what I'm saying is, Doc, anything that's registered, they perceive it, the other side, as having the most value, which is why they want it registering, and they're proving to be the most difficult ones for us to keep hold of. But we're almost there with vehicles, mate.
Yeah, it's sounding good. It's sounding really good, this one is. I mean, the registration thing is something that, you know, once you, because I've been using the registration documents to show people what registration means, because we used to be able to show them and say, look, it says you're the registered keeper on the top of this document here, but they've changed that now, haven't they? They've sent everybody out ones that don't say registered keeper on them anymore. But
I don't know. Don't say anything. What do they say?
I can't remember what it says on the top of it now, but it used to say registered keeper in really nice big letters. And recently they sent out new documents, I believe, to everybody. We sent got one which no longer includes that wording. I mean, if you look at it, it's still saying the same thing. It's just, I think, not making it as obvious, like. But it made me think about other registrations that go on. I mean, obviously the registration of children, and hopefully we'll get to talk a bit about the birth certificate and stuff shortly. But I've been wondering about you know, when you register with a doctor, are you handing over special powers to the doctor by having yourself registered in a surgery? When you register a marriage, are you handing something over there as well? I mean, is there there's presumably wider application to the importance of this word, is there?
There is, and you've just made that connection by using the word application.
Right.
That's absolutely right. You have to, we live in a construct now, a legal construct, where you're having to submit an application for registration. And that's what it's all about. We know what submit means. To apply, application means to beg, and to register is, I used to think that you gave it away entirely. That was early Freeman stuff a few years ago. But what actually happens, Doc, is, I'm sure most people know, is when you register anything, they split the title. And they keep legal title, so they actually own it, and they give us equity, title and equity. And for anybody who doesn't understand it, I think the best way of explaining that is, we're left with a user's entitlement as long as... I'll tell you what, imagine a landlord's got an house and he rents it out to someone. In effect, the equivalent is he's got legal title. He can say what happens, he can dispose of that property or whatever. The tenant who's living in it and paying him rent, that's the equivalent of us registering it. A tenant can't go out and start around knocking walls out and stuff, can he? He's got to abide by the rules.
Yeah.
So that, in effect, is what happens when we register. They own it, they call all the shots, they can dispose of it, take it. That's why they can take registered items off us, including houses, vehicles and children. And as long as we get to have the enjoyment as in equity, so we get to user's enjoyment as long as we abide by the rules. And that's what's happened by us volunteering to register.
Mm. Yeah, and it is. That's, again, something that Dave brought up on the show he did with us, was that if you look at the forms carefully for the registration of the vehicle, you can see that you are registering yourself as a business when you do that, because that's the terms of the boxes that you're filling in. Another thing that you've done which interests me, sticking with the subject of carriages for the moment, is you returned your driving license to them, didn't you, which I find interesting. What was the method of doing that, and why did you do it?
Yeah, a lot of people ask me for all these different methods, and I keep messaging them back and saying, look, I'm a bit of a simpleton, really, in a way, because I just do it how I feel, and it's really simple. And all I basically did was handwrite a notice six years ago, handwrite a notice and sent it back. In fact, you know that arrest I was telling you about at the service station?
Yeah, that's what I was trying to get you back to, because tie that in with the not having a drive, but you got away you were driving without a license for 6 years.
I still am now. I don't have a license.
But this is this point when you had these men in fancy dress pull you over at a service station. This was effectively when this came home to roost, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, because after I got out of that jail after 3 days, they kept trying to bring a court case, and when I kept steaming in and doing a trust and dissolving it all, and I kept on for ages. Then I adjourned it, and they kept going and going because they just didn't want me to beat them. In the end, they kidnapped me one Saturday morning. They were going to break my door down and I were on my own with my kids. And I ended up getting took in on a Saturday morning, cuffed and everything, and they kept me in local Nick and dragged me on prison bus to magistrate's court on a Monday. I was on my own. All the prisoners were on. I'm sat on prison bus and everything, and everyone's saying, what are you in for? And someone's saying, I stabbed someone and I robbed someone. And we can't see each other, we're just talking. I'm sat by. Come right down to my bit, and what are you in for? And I went, driving whilst disqualified. Everybody burst out laughing. So I've never wanted to be a criminal so much in my life. Anyway, so they take me to magistrate's court and they leave my case right to the end of the day. So I've now been locked up from early Saturday morning right till Monday afternoon, and they're trying to teach me a lesson. And that gets adjourned, and I end up defending myself in a 3-hour trial. What the charges were: driving whilst disqualified. I found some fantastic information. I may have said it before, but I'll tell you again. Driving whilst disqualified, driving with a bold tyre, they said that vehicle had a bold tyre, driving with no insurance and not giving me details. So there were the four charges. I kept the journey, it went on for nearly a year. Did it go on for a year? It went on for ages anyway. And what they said is, if you don't plead guilty straight away, it's a 6-month sentence, driving whilst disqualified, and that's what they wanted to give me. And I thought, no chance, I'm not putting up with that. Anyway, cut a long story short, I had a 3-hour trial against Crown bloody prosecution barrister. And what I tried to do is a bad time to experiment, because if I got it wrong, I got 6 months prison. And I decided to try and find out, this is what I mean about pushing the boundaries out. 25 people came with me to this, they just didn't want me to get locked up. And I says, look, I'm not going to get locked up. They said, you should have pleaded guilty and took a fine. I said, no, no matter what happens, and I'm actually going down their line now, I'm not challenging jurisdiction, I'm going to try and beat him. Bad time to experiment, because if it goes wrong, I'm away, mate. So anyway, 3-hour trial, I end up beating him on all four counts. So driving with no insurance, I cross-examined the coppers, and lady, to see how uncomfortable they were, the magistrates kept saving them, though. Lady officer, whatever she is, I said, what's the procedure for a car with no insurance? And she said, it gets impounded and crushed. I said, was my vehicle impounded and crushed? She went, no. I said, why not? She says, well, we couldn't ascertain whether it had insurance, so we gave you the benefit of the doubt. I said, thank you very much. Charge number one, bye-bye. Charge number two, I know. And I'm not big-headed. I'm really confident. And, you know, I offered the barrister a glass of water and stuff, and I was really good. I said to magistrates, I don't fully understand your procedure and what goes where. So point me in the right direction, and I said, I think you'll see something pretty interesting. And they looked at me as to say, he's a nutter, this bloke. I know. Charge number two, driving bold tyre, under tread tyre. So I conceded that. This is what I mean about being honourable. And I said to a male police officer, I said, I concede I don't know whether it was under tread. And he went, well, it was. And I said, can you produce now what measuring device was used on the night? Can you provide now the measurements for us all for the court? He went, no. I said, why not? He said, well, nobody measured it. Said, thank you very much. Charge number two, bye. So my mates are waving to me thinking, bloody hell, he's like flipping Columbo, this bloke. Charge number three, not giving me details, which is what they actually arrested me on. They didn't quote pace when they arrested me. If you don't give you details, they can arrest you under pace. I can't remember what section it is, Police and Criminal Evidence Act.
Yeah.
If they suspect a crime has taken place or is about, or an offence, it has taken place or about to, they arrest you under pace to take you in for further questioning because you're not identifying yourself, basically.
Yeah, which I suppose they're assuming you're automatically suspicious, eh?
Yes, that's there. Get out. And it's because they want to pin you down to that joinder for name, address and date of birth, don't they? And then they've got you under maritime law as a legal fiction corporate name, you see. So charge number three, not giving me details. I said, did you quote Pace on the night? And he went, we utilised it. I went, no. I said, did you quote... And these are the people that roughed me up, so it was nice to get a bit of verbal payback. Yeah. Honestly, mate, he was squirming and scratching his arse, and he wanted to get out of there. A great big fat bloke he was. So I said, no, you're not listening. Did you quote Pace? He went, we utilised it. I said, no. And I checked up on it. I did a lot of studying for it. I said, you have to quote Pace to utilise Pace. You did not quote Pace again on the night, did you? And he went, no. And then the magistrate says, Mr. Freeman, can we move on, please? I think it's time to move on. So I thought they've rescued him. And so charge number three, thank you very much. Sorry. I said, quote me the law then that states that... I'll tell you what I said. I said, as soon as I got on my vehicle, I says, was I immediately arrested? He went, yes. I said, you were the arresting officer? He said, yes. I says, what were the first words you said as you cuffed me? He said, you have the right to remain silent. I said, thank you very much. I said, you've just arrested me and told me I've got the right to remain silent. And then you're charging me now for not giving me details and saying anything, when you've just advised me that if I do speak, it's going to be used against me. I said, why the hell would I speak? And so, charge number three, thank you very much, bye-bye. And it sounds like I'm being cocky now, but I weren't, I'm not cocky, I was just pretty professional.
Well, you'd spent a year getting ready for it, hadn't you? It'd obviously taken you
No, what happened is I kept adjourning it and I went interested, and then when, after they kidnapped me, that Saturday morning, I only had 3 weeks to do all this.
Right. It's
the next hearing, that was it. We're going to give you 6 months in 3 weeks, that's it. So I only had 3 weeks to do this. So can you imagine, I don't think I slept hardly just to get the information. But this is the best bit, and this is what we can use. You're going to love this. You may have heard it before, but it's still brilliant. And as far as I know, I'm the only one that's found this. And so all those charges have gone. So the last one, the barrister says to me, he said, is it true you don't have a licence? I said, yeah, of course it's true. I said, I sent it back 6 years ago. He said, you can't drive without a licence. I said, well, what's a licence? He said, well, you have to have a licence to drive. I said, do you? I said, I've realised that the licence is contractual in nature, which it is. It's an offer of a contract, and I don't require it, so I sent it back. What did I say? I said, we can't be licensed to do unlawful acts, can we? And he went, no. I said, well, if you're saying that I can't be licensed to do an unlawful act, then if it's lawful for me to do it, why am I seeking permission? It's permission. Why am I seeking permission to do something that's lawful? And he couldn't answer it. So it's a contract, and it's a contractual in nature. So I sent it back. Does that even make sense, yeah?
Yeah, it does, yeah.
Okay, so he's now pulling his hair out, this little horrible Crown barrister. So he jumps up, and he thinks he's got me here. He requests 6 months prison, I can't remember the wording, for driving whilst disqualified. And I said, whoa. And I said, can you please give me your definition of disqualification or disqualified? He says, yeah, it means you can't drive. I says, does it? And this is the bit I found out, and everybody's onto it now. Oh, you've seen the faces, Doc. Brilliant. He says, it means you can't drive. I says, does it? Where's it said that? He says, well, it's well known. He said, no, he said, everybody knows. I says, you can actually stand there and tell me what everybody knows. He went, well, no. I thought, brilliant, you've got some power. I says, okay. And this is magistrate saved him again. I says, what definition of disqualification are you using? And he says, well, it means you can't drive. So I've got Black's Law Dictionary out. I can't remember what edition. I found it. I don't know how I found it. And I said, right, Mr. Magistrates, clerk to the justices, Mr. Barrister wouldn't even give me his name. I said, this is your legal dictionary, your words, your definitions, not me putting a twist on it. I said, page so-and-so, and I showed it, and I took it along, and I said, disqualify, or disqualification, disqualify, meaning to make ineligible, that's what it says. I said, ineligible, unable to serve in office. That's what disqualification means, folks. Unable to serve in office. They can only disqualify you from being a government agent. You ought to see his face. I could tell. He wanted the floor to open and swallow him. And the magistrates looked at each other, and everyone's looking at each other. And not, you know that little pause they have, though, when it seems like forever? And I turned around at my mates, and my mates was like, Manchester United just scored a goal.
Yeah.
And I'm jumping up and down thinking, bloody hell, he's got them. And this is like pregnant pause thing where they're all looking to each other for assistance to say, what the hell has he just said? And they didn't know what to say. And so I got him, I wanted the barrister to admit what I've just said, to rebut it. And as I did, the magistrate dived in and said, I think Mr. Freeman, he's had enough now. Can we move on? And I thought, shit, they're doing it again. So I got them. So charge number four, that was 6 months. Thank you very much. Off you go. Anyway, so I proved that, I proved a lot of things there. The vehicle was unregistered, so they couldn't touch it. That's why it went impounded. That's why I didn't get a ticket.
Yeah.
Being unregistered works, not having a license is permission, and they can only openly give you permission to do something lawful. So if it's lawful, why am I seeking permission anyway?
Well, that's another really useful thing to know. I mean, we know it in theory, but it's really useful to know that somebody's managed to be out there and demonstrated him, you know, on the play court, as it were.
Yeah, but Doc, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I still don't to this day. I just know it felt right.
You've got some really good guides, mate. That's what it is. You've got those little voices you've got. They're really useful, aren't they?
Yeah, that's what it is. It's feeling. But at this stage, you see, I don't. I've got no help from anybody. Nobody's giving me advice to help me because nobody knows. And who would know that disqualifying from driving really means unable to serve in office? And I said it, unable to serve in office. I said, I don't want to be a government agent. That's why I can send it back in first place. So you're thus proving my point. That's what a licence is for, to be a government agent. And they couldn't rebut it. So I proved that, and I proved it's contractual in nature. And like I say, I proved that you cannot be disqualified from driving. And so I'll get off this bit now, if it's labouring.
It's very useful, I think. Again, you know, because that's the kind of thing that's likely to be useful in other places and at other times. I think it's quite interesting that so much of the stuff in this particular story you have learnt by playing the game, haven't you? If you weren't a player, you wouldn't have learnt it and none of us would have heard about it. So actually being out there and kind of pushing the boundaries is, okay, there's risks involved, obviously quite significant risks sometimes, but it is what people keep emphasising to me, is that you experience is the only way of learning this stuff, and actually going out there and doing it is the only way you can get the real confidence to talk about it.
Yeah, because people can pass information on, and I do pass information on as well, but I always tell people this is supposed to be this, but I've not done it yet. And what I realise about jumping into that pool, Doc, is that I won't pass information on and tell somebody this is a solution unless I experience it myself. I will pass information on and say this is supposed to work, and I always tell them, and I've got some information later on that it's not tried and tested yet. It should work, but I'll always say it's not been tried and tested. But what I did is I've done it with everything, Doc. I've done it with gas and electric, for instance. I've not paid for gas and electric for 6.5 years now, I think. It's six, perhaps a bit less, perhaps 5 years since I got onto it. What else have I done? I've done the gas and electric stuff. I've done the vehicle stuff. I've done all sorts anyway. I'm a bit of a loon, really.
As a matter of interest, when they turned up on your door threatening to kick it in for driving without the documents or whatever, do you think they actually would have done that? Do you think they had the right to kick your door in under those circumstances? I mean, you'd caused no harm, loss or damage, had you?
No, it's a great point. What it is they were arresting what they did is they used two naive officers who didn't really know much to go and execute this warrant that I never saw, actually. I don't even think there was a warrant. But what they said is, we're arresting you for a no-show at court. That's what the arrest warrant that I never saw was for. Now, you've got to think about it. It's just dragged on for ages. I'm sat on my own with two kids on a Saturday morning. I said, what happens if I don't come out? They said, well, we're going to have to break in. We're going to have to take you forcibly. But what they said, Doc, and they said, we're going to get you into Saturday court. This is about perhaps 9:30 in the morning. I said, Saturday court? There's no such thing. He said, there is. We have occasional cases on a Saturday from dinner time till about 2:00 in the afternoon. He says, if you come along, he says, we'll get you back with your kids in a couple of hours. So I thought, shit. Anyway, cool, long story short, they took the kids to a relative for me to look after. Took me in, and the desk sergeant in my town, well, he knows me now, he thinks I'm an absolute lunatic. He finds me amusing. As soon as I walked in, he said, there's no court on a Saturday today. He says, you'll have to stay until Monday. And the two coppers genuinely looked at him and looked at me. And they looked at me, and I could tell in their eyes, they thought, oh, shit, we've been used. So they were just, The whole idea was to let me feel terrible, locked up for 3 days, leave it till the last minute, drag me under threat and coercion, under force, and then when I'm at my weakest, is to force me into their jurisdiction, which is what they did.
Yeah.
Thus, I've then got to appear the next time, because they can come and arrest me, which is why I tried their system. I'll just finish it off, Doc, 2 seconds.
Yeah.
So I did that court case thing, smashed all four counts. Magistrates retire for half an hour. I'm in the foyer with all my mates. The barrister walks past and gives me the most evil look, like I just killed Kenny or something. Terrible. And everyone laughed and thought, God, what's his problem? Anyway, I go back in half an hour later. Here's the verdict. I'm feeling pretty confident. I think I'm not going to get prison here. Okay, magistrates come back out. Well, they talk a load of bollocks, as they do. Okay, first count, all four counts, guilty, 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 guilty. All four counts, guilty, mate. I just looked at the mates as if to say, what the hell can I do? I smashed them all. Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, quick thinking that I am. I look slow, but I'm really sharp in my mind. I point to magistrates and I say, please delay sentencing. In fact, I didn't say please. I said, delay sentencing. I've got 2 children to look after. And do you know what they said? They went, right, this was a Tuesday. They said, come back Thursday for your sentencing. So now I think I'm getting 6 months. I'm not now.
Yeah.
So I make sure that my kids go to my family. I'm not bothered. I go 2 days later, and I'll make this really short so we can move on to something else. Just one mate now comes with me. I give him my mobile phone. He gives me a lift, and I shake hands with him, and I go for my sentencing. Different scenario, same courtroom. This time we've got a little district judge, I think he was, a woman typing, a probation officer, and nobody else, and just my mate sat in public gallery. District judge, I'd have gone for a beer with him. Different story altogether. What I'm getting at here is, because 25 people came with me, they couldn't be seen to be beaten by a fat lump from Sheffield who beat the whole magistrate's court and the barrister's hands down. So when I went for sentencing, guess what happened, Rob?
Go on.
District judge, he said, would you like to be called Rob? I thought, flipping hell, they're all nasty to me. I went, yeah, I'm looking behind me. He says, would you like to have a seat, Rob? I'm sat down. He says, I've just got some papers to shuffle about. Would you like to stand up, Rob? I'm thinking, here we go. He goes, right. He says, you've been found guilty on all 4 charges. I can't discuss them. I thought, I know you can't because I've beat you. He went, right. Driving with no insurance. He went, oh, you've been found guilty. He said, I tell you what, we'll not have a fine for that. I'll stick some points on your licence. I thought, eh? So my mate were trying to... Bear in mind, Doc, that he's sticking points on an invisible licence that doesn't exist because he knows I've sent it back.
Yeah, yeah.
Driving with a bow tie, whatever it was. Oh, he said, ooh. He said, we'll not have a fine for that. He said, I'll stick a couple of points on your licence. I thought, hello. Not giving me details, never mentioned it. I thought, I'm in here, I thought. And then he went, ooh. And I thought, ooh. And he went driving whilst disqualified. He went, ooh. And I'm thinking, ooh. He said, I know. We were like, it was proper pantomime. And he went, what did he say now? He said, oh, I've had a recommendation that I'm going to give you give you 6 months prison because you've been found guilty. And he went, well, but I'm not going to do that. I thought, oh, God. And then he paused. I thought, shit, he's going to give me 3 months. And he went, what did he say now? Oh, he said, I'll tell you what. He said, I'd had a word with probation officer and she said, well, you're either going to get prison or a tag. You know, one of them tag things.
Yeah.
Or community service or all three or any combination of all three. And I said to her before I went in, I said, I'm not having an electronic tag. And she went, why not? And I didn't know what to send. It just come to me. I went, I'm electrosensitive. She went, what? I went, I'm electrosensitive. She went, what's that? I said, I can't run anything electronic. I said, it makes me feel terrible and I'm sick and everything. She went, oh. And he said, you're electrosensitive, aren't you? I went, yeah. He says, would your doctor be willing to tell you that? I went, yeah. I said, my doctor, I says, contact him at my surgery, Dr. Rock. No, I didn't. I said, yeah, he'll vouch for it. So I forced him into either locking me up or giving me some sort of community service. And he says, you've had a word with probation and you're keen to do a bit of voluntary work, aren't you? Which I thought I'm going to get 6 months, so I said I would. I said, yeah. He went, well, that can be a punishment then. He says, you can help the homeless one day a week. I thought, brilliant, no prison. Got rid of the tag thing. And then he went, we'll not have a fine for that. He says, I'll stick a couple of points on your licence. I thought, what's going off here? And then he said, last thing he said, he went, ooh, money. And I went, ooh. Honestly, he was trying his best. Get this. He went, I think he said, barrister's cost is £775. And he went, oh, you're not paying that. He went, you're not paying that, Rob, are you? And I went, I thought to myself, no, I'm not. This bloke's helping me. And he went, how does 250 quid sound? And I looked at my mate, because we were in public garage, and I was dying to say, it sounds like something I'm not going to pay. But I didn't dare say, because I thought I'm being really cheeky here. And he went, how does 250 quid sound? And I pulled a really pathetic face, just to say, I don't want to pay it. Honestly, he tried his best to help me. And then he pointed at me like a pantomime, and he went, ooh, you're a single parent, aren't you? And I jumped, and I went, yeah. And honestly, I had a pathetic expression. He went, can you manage a fiver a week? And I went, oh, go on, then. I went, go on, I'll try my best. So what happened is then, Doug, is when I came out, it dawned on me, what happened is I volunteered to do some voluntary work for no pay, and I volunteered to go half on someone's cost. Now, it's not a fine. I volunteered to go half on somebody's cost that I've never paid and they've never asked me for. So in the end, what I'm trying to say to our listeners, and it seems to be going on forever, is that you can beat them even using their system. I wouldn't recommend it, but I actually did beat them. And to save face with all them people, of course I only went with one person for the sentencing and they didn't even know he was with me. I'd beaten, they said I was guilty, but they never found me guilty.
Do you think it would have been different if you turned up with a couple of dozen people for the sentencing?
No, absolutely impossible. And I've had this from a talk I did. I've got a friend who's an expert on equity. And what he said the reason they brought a district judge for sentencing is it wouldn't matter if I took 150 people, that sentence was the same. It was nothing. They took no action on me. And guess what he also said? He went, Rob, if you apply for your licence again, he said, you're not banned, you can carry on driving. I thought, I am going to carry on driving and I'm not having a licence. And what I realised, and I didn't realise until I did this talk, and a friend, a man who's a bit of an expert on High Court and equity and trust and stuff, he said, Rob, what happened there is, he says, because you beat him, you got into the lower end of equity. And in an equity court, Doug, and everybody listening, it's a district judge or a judge above. It's not a magistrate, it's a judge. He has to judge. It used to be called the King's Conscience. And actually, it's probably the Queen's Conscience now. And the judge has to judge as if it was happening to him. And what happens is, when he judges in equity, he has to use his conscience. And what he realised is that, even though they didn't admit it, there was irrefutable proof that I'd beat him on all four charges. So he acted in equity, which I didn't realise at the time. So if I took 250 people, the sentencing would have been exactly the same. Right. And that's why it came from that judge. So, yeah, you can beat them, mate.
Okay. Yeah. Very good. Very good. You must have been hellish relieved by that, then.
Oh, you're not going to get the best of it. I'll tell you the last little bit. You're not going to believe it. That homeless place, it had too many people. And so I went to work in a cemetery not far from my kid's school. And it was lovely. There were two blokes were in it and a great set of lads. Of course, I'm educating people. And you never had to do any work. I think I went twice a week and we never really did any work. But what happens, get this, this is what I mean about when you're acting on it, something comes back and helps you. And I kept saying to people, I'm getting paid for this. And they said, how can you? I said, because when I've done this, it's called voluntary work now. Oh, sorry, it's called unpaid work. It's basically community service. Honestly, we're a real doddle. So it's because when I've done, I'm taking this to Queen's Bench High Court and I'm going to put a claim in and get paid for this. For all the actions they've done. Anyway, I only got a few hours. I did three quarters of nothing. And what happened were, a brick fell. When I were working there, there was a big barrier thing, and a brick fell from top of this barrier. It was snowing, and it was covered. This brick that shouldn't have been there were on top of this barrier, and it shouldn't have been there, and it fell and hit me on the arm. So straight away, I went to my doctor, and I know it sounds bad, but I've now got a claim in for thousands, because that brick shouldn't have been there. So rather than me have to go all the way and have all the hassle of a year's court case, I'm actually getting paid out now from through their negligence where I were working, through putting a brick on a barrier that shouldn't have been there, that were covered in snow. And I took photographs of my arm and everything, and I've now got a few thousand quid coming for an injured arm. So that's interesting, isn't it?
That's
so
a bit, I did get yeah, paid. Bit of a bonus for you there.
This is what I mean. So yeah. I actually... Oh, and best thing is, I had to go back to court and I said, I've been injured and stuff. And they said, they said, well, you can't finish your community work. I think they'd offer it. And they said, we're going to have to, you know, we may have to send you to prison because you've not finished your sentence. Anyway, I got back there, gave them, they tried to give me tag, I think. I said, I've already told you, I'm electrosensitive. So I forced them into locking me up or getting rid of the rest of the sentence, half a sentence. In the end, they just got rid of half a sentence. So in effect, I'm going to end up, you know, getting paid for the bit of suffering I did, mate. So,
fantastic. I think it's quite interesting to note that those two policemen that came and offered you a guest appearance at a sort of Tiswell's court on a Saturday were in fact lying to you. I'm not sure everybody's aware. I know that many people are, but I'm not sure that everybody's aware that police are allowed to lie to you to get their own way, which is pretty shocking, really, isn't it? It's why one of the questions I'd like to ask them, you know, if as and when I encounter them, as I'm sure will occur eventually, I'd like to ask them, can I trust you? I think that's quite an interesting question, isn't it?
It is, and it's an interesting word in itself, isn't it?
Yeah. The other thing, just, I'll tell you what, we'll have a 10-minute sort of comfort break in a moment, but I just want to ask one question about the 3 days that you were locked up for over that weekend. I remember you saying that you didn't have anything to eat or drink during those 3 days. What was the rationale behind that? Was it just the food and the water were crap or what?
No, well, what it were is I've only ever been arrested really for not giving me details. That's the only thing I've ever been arrested. When I said to you I lost two cars and kept five, the two that I lost, I'd purposely had no tax test insurance on just to see what would happen. In fact, one of the times I got arrested on purpose, just to find out what I could and couldn't do and to learn the whole experience about how they treat you. So I got arrested probably two or three times before that one I've just told you about. And what it were is how they trapped me in there, because I've been there so many times. In fact, another time I was arrested for not giving me details, they only took me into the back entrance and into a holding room. And I didn't even go up to desk because they'd seen me that much and they'd get nothing from me. They just brought me back home again. So at this stage, I've been arrested a few times. And for that one, that whole force are pretty pissed off with me. They just, apart from desk sergeant, he kind of likes me, thinks I'm a bit of a character. But they all hate me because I'm onto them. You know, they swore oaths to do right by all manner of people, not persons. It's the same oath that the Queen swore. They're supposed to do right by all manner of people, and they're not. They are corporate collection officers, and they know I'm onto them. So basically, that last 3 days, I didn't trust that they weren't going to put something in my drink. I think all I did is got some water and dabbed my tongue, which obviously I felt terrible 3 days later. But I just didn't trust them because I'd wound them up so much. And they tried to serve documents to my house through a window,
yeah.
And I wouldn't let them, and I'd really had some battles with him. It's my own fault being stupid, really. But like I said, I've got to a certain level now. They kind of leave me alone now.
Yeah.
But I didn't trust that they wouldn't put something in my food or something, do you know what I mean?
And are we obliged to give them their details? Or, you know, if they haven't witnessed us causing any harm, loss or damage, are we obliged to talk to them? Or do we genuinely have the right to remain silent?
Well, it's a great question because this is why PACE has been introduced, the Police and Criminal Evidence Act. They've quoted PACE to me before, and I said, well, that doesn't apply to me. And they said, what do you mean it doesn't apply? I said, well, what's it called, the Police and Criminal Evidence Act? They went, yeah. I said, well, I'm neither a policeman or a criminal. I said, am I a policeman? He said, no. I said, look, I said, I'm not cheeky to him. I said, I'm trying to get you to see from my point of view. I said, Police and Criminal Evidence Act. I said, so it only involves police officers and criminals, does it not? And he went, yeah. I said, well, am I a police officer? And he went, no. I said, so by process of deduction, then I can only be a criminal. And he went, well, yeah. And I says, well, what are you charging with him now? He said, well, I'm not yet. That's why we're taking you in. I said, can you see why it doesn't apply to me? It's not police and criminal suspicion. It's not Police and Suspicion of Criminal Evidence Acts. I said, it's Police and Criminal Evidence Acts. I said, you're labelling me as either a police officer or a criminal, neither of which I am. And he understood it, but he still had to do it. Can you see what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I said, I'm neither, because I said, are you telling me I'm a criminal now and I'll willingly come with you? If you can supply evidence that I'm a criminal or a police officer, I'll come with you. Otherwise that act doesn't apply to me. And that's how they've got round things. And that's another reason they didn't like it. But then they say you've got the right to remain silent, which I've got two interview tapes where I don't speak at all. It's the most boring tapes ever, isn't it? I'm talking. I know, it's hard to sit there for 45 minutes an hour and not speak.
Yeah.
I nearly slipped, you know, 1 minute, Doc. They were getting really pissed off, they were. One was shouting and one were quiet. And what they did is I was just staring and not making any, nothing at all, nothing. And then he went, oh, was that a nod? He went, Mr. Freeman's just nodded. And I almost went, no, I didn't. And then I thought, well, it's got me then. So what I decided to do is stare at the table so that any eye contact couldn't be misconstrued. And every answer was Mr. Freeman staring at the table. Mr. Freeman staring at his hands. Mr. Freeman looks like he's fell asleep. That's all it is all the way through.
Right.
So they couldn't use any of that. But they tell you you've got the right to remain silent. Now, you've got to be prepared to take the knocks, and I was, even though I'm on my own with the kids, and this is what we're going to say. There's a maxim, Doc, and a saying, and it's sacrifice is the measure of credibility. Sacrifice is the measure of credibility. And when I first learned that 6 years ago, I thought, if I'm going to do this, if I want to be credible, and I want some modicum of freedom, then I'm going to have to make sacrifices, and that's what I did. And I'm prepared to get arrested, I'm prepared to get dragged in there, but now I've learnt so much, I know how to get, I know how to be recompensated after this. So I'm willing to do 2 or 3 days in prison. But did you want a break? Because this might tie in with what happens when you do get locked up.
Because
I wanted to talk about bail and stuff, what I've learned, done.
Well,
that's all right with you.
That'd be really good, yeah, indeed. Let's hold that thought, as they say. It'd be useful for me to go and get myself another glass of water. So if I put, I'll give us 10 minutes, shall I, Rob, and then we'll come back.
Doc, have I been laboured on too much about certain topics? Shall
no.
I make them quicker?
Okay. No.
Tell me if I'm just give us a quick boot.
I think it's good, all good information, and you seem to have learned more stuff even since I talked to you last, and that was only about 10 days ago, so.
I've got some great stuff to tell you, and it's not tried and tested. You know the birth certificate?
Yeah.
I think we can use it in court and not get locked up. But like I say, I'll tell you about that in a bit, but it's not, we haven't tried and tested it yet, but I can't see any reason for it not to work, and this all fits in. Sorry, mate.
Brilliant. No, that's good. We'll come back to that as well. And then we'll come back for some more, because, you know, he's obviously keen to chat. We can't prize him away from the microphone. I'll see you in a few minutes then. And, about 10 minutes or so, and we'll come back for some more of the same. Hopefully. Well, that was Dr. Rock talking recently with Rob Freeman. There's some more of that to come, but I thought, Ben, as we've been given the opportunity of having a bit of a break, because there was a lot of information there, wasn't there, folks? I thought I'd put on a couple of tunes and then come back and play the rest of that to you when there's some, as he says, bit of stuff about bail. And pleading or not pleading, and some interesting, breaking news, interesting potential perhaps for the birth certificate as well. In the meantime, here's you're listening live to Dr. Rock's radio show on peoplesinternetradio.com, Pi Radio, Irrational Number, Rational Radio. We've been listening to a recording of Dr. Rock having a chat, shooting the breeze with Rob Freeman, and there's a bit more of that to come, so I shan't spoil the silence anymore by whistling away myself. I'll simply put back the Rob Pod. Back with you shortly. We were going to return to the subject of police stations. You still hear me all right, Rob?
Yeah, loud and clear, Doc. Yeah, I'm suitably refreshed with the glass, yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. Well, it sounds from the fact that, sometimes when you get dragged into the police station, they just sit you down and then drive you home again. It sounds like you've got some pretty successful methods of dealing with them. I mean, I guess not all of us are familiar with what happens to you when you get dragged into one of these places. So perhaps you might like to give us a bit of an outline of what they do and what you've been doing to deal with them.
Yeah, and for anybody who hasn't been kidnapped in there, it's not a nice place. They do treat you politely because they have to, as part of their procedure, but it's not nice. You are automatically considered a criminal no matter what, and the conditions in there are crap. You've got a bed that's rock hard, a pillow that's rock hard, a little thin blanket, a steel stainless steel toilet and sink, and that's it. And you camera up, they can watch everything you're doing. So it ain't very nice at all. And basically, it's to leave you in the cell, it's the fear of it, and basically submit to jurisdiction, that's all it's about. So did you want to ask what sort of happens, talking about?
Yeah, basically, and how you avoid, I mean, especially really, how you avoid submitting to jurisdiction, because of course that's... They've been trained, they're very good at getting us to cede jurisdiction of one sort or another, so it would be useful to touch on that, I think.
Yeah, well, I've never, apart from when they kidnapped me and then kept me there and dragged me into magistrate's court, that one I was telling you about, they've never got any joy from locking me up, and I'm not frightened, and they know I'm not frightened, and so they had to go to those lengths. It was dragging me into magistrate's court that gave them the jurisdiction then. That's why I represented, well, not represented, don't use that word. That's why I presented myself in that court case. But whenever they've locked me up before, they've never had anything. They've got nothing. Nothing's ever occurred. And so what happens is, as soon as I am under arrest for anything, I automatically, and I'm not advising or telling anybody to do this, you know, do your own due diligence and find out. But what I can say through my own experience is this is more or less what will happen, and then it's up to you individually what you want to do. So the very minute I'm arrested, whether it's PACE or whatever, they have to read your rights, and the minute they say you have the right to remain silent, like I said earlier, from there on I do not speak, which they don't like. Yeah? Okay. The whole object of getting you in there and being arrested is for us to speak and thus incriminate ourselves, to testify against ourselves. Originally, all law was the spoken word, it was oral. That's why you go to a hearing. They'd have you believe it's all paperwork and writing, it's not. Originally, law was spoken and oral. That's where the saying, my word is my bond, comes from.
So
anytime they tell you have the right to remain silent, you are under arrest. And thus, when you're under arrest, you do not speak. Okay, so... They leave you in the cell. Now, their job, once they've got you in that police station, is to process you, get you in the system as a corporate entity, discover joinder, name, address, date of birth, those three things, thus put you in the corporate entity, as we know, under their jurisdiction, and they can take action against you. Bear in mind, I'm talking about civil matters here, that they call crimes that aren't. I think we covered it last week. If you commit harm to and people say it's harm, injury, loss, whatever, it's all harm, that's it. If you don't cause harm to another living soul, then there's nobody to come forward to say that you've harmed him. This is what I'm talking about. Then it's purely civil, no matter how they dress it up. I'm not condoning getting away with crimes where you have caused harm to someone. That's a different story. So everything I've ever been arrested for, like we spoke last week, are non-arrestable offences because there's no injured party. So based on that, they tell me I've got the right to remain silent, and I exercise that right throughout. I'll just let, for people who aren't sure, under no circumstances at any time have you got an obligation to speak to a police officer or anybody. Now, you have got no obligation to speak to anybody at any time, and you've definitely got no obligation to put pen to paper and sign anything. The signature's everything, the sign of nature, basically, and that's what they want. So what they do is they leave you sweating in the cells. First they book you in, chuck you in a cell. They leave you there for quite a long time. And it's all part of the trying to create trauma and fear. And then they'll get you out to interview you. It'll be a tape thing. And then what they do is they'll ask you to state your name for the tape and stuff, your address, date of birth. As soon as you do, remember, these are civil matters because the punishment is all about money. So the idea is, once they told me that I've got the right to remain silent, I exercise that right till the second they let me out. So they'll drag you into some holding room and then interview you under caution. It's all recorded. And it's a difficult thing. Even when they took me in the van, they're trying to talk to me in the van, and it's all contractual. As soon as you speak, you're in contract. They even tried tricks, Doc, on the way to the... After they dropped my kids off, I'm sat in the back of the van, cuffed. And the driver, the couple were driving, they were touring. He said, are you all right in the back, Rob? Trying to get me to speak. And he just told me I've got the right to remain silent. And I'm contacting you, see. And a police officer will never ever speak to you, no matter how friendly he seems, will never speak to you other than to gather information to use against you. No matter how nice he seems, that's their main objective. And by us speaking, he said, are you working? What do you do for a living? And I'm sitting back, and I just looked at him. And he wants me to contract, because the tragedy was absolutely every single word that comes out of your mouth. That's the only way, actually, they can find you guilty, is by what you speak. Yeah. So and it's an odd thing to do. First and foremost, do not speak. If they do know your name, or they think you know your name, and they call you Mr. Smith or Mr. Freeman, or if they call you by your first name, imagine you're invisible. Imagine you're nameless, you're timeless, you've got nothing. You are your own entity, and you do not communicate with them whatsoever.
And that's because you can actually cede jurisdiction by a look, can't you, or a shrug, or whatever.
You can, but, as long as you don't speak, they can say you made a gesture, now that's subjective, or he nodded, or he blinked, and they can say all that, but what you don't do is ever speak. And so, I'll do taped interviews where I say absolutely nothing, then they take me back to the cell. Now, they've got to identify me, okay? What happened were, on one of the arrests, an earlier officer, there'd been a court case over that initial driving thing, and I steamed into court and done a trust thing and sacked everybody off. But the name, they remembered the name, Rob Freeman. So when I got arrested another time and I wouldn't speak to him, a copper said, well, that's Rob Freeman, I remember him from last time. So he's took it upon himself to identify me. So now they're calling me Rob and they're calling me Mr. Freeman, they're trying to get me to contract. So they think they know who I am, but they don't know who I am because Mr. Rob Freeman, or the capitalised name, is not me. So they need joined, they need me to consent to it by speaking, you see. Any admission, if they say, you want a cup of coffee, Rob? And I say, yeah, boom, they've got me.
Yeah.
They can doctor their case notes for the inside the custody suite and say, well, I called him Mr. Taylor. I called him Mr. Freeman, because he was Officer Taylor.
Yeah.
I called him Mr. Freeman and he agreed or whatever, so I do not speak whatsoever. So first and foremost, don't do that. There's a good thing about, I'll tell you about bail, because this is the big one. They leave you in there, for my case, they leave me in for the maximum they can, which I think is 72 hours. It's about 3 days or thereabouts. Okay, then what they say is, we're going to let you out on bail, we're going to get you out of here. They keep saying we're going to try and get you out of here as fast as possible. With me, they left me to the maximum. If it's your first time, they won't do that. They leave you a few hours. And what they want you to do is, and this is the important bit, is they want you to submit to bail. Okay, as soon as you submit to bail, you are submitting to their jurisdiction and you're submitting to agree to appear in court under the court's jurisdiction, so you've lost straight away. So all that work, being in there for 3 days and then accepting bail, you've just blown it. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, so what I've realised is never ever accept bail. I'll tell you why. If you do decide to speak and you want to make a point, don't do it when they're calling your names. If you do want to say anything, the time they offer you bail, just say to them, I don't consent or accept bail. If you're going to charge me, take me to court right now and charge me. Now, they can't do that, though, because one, they can't identify you if you've not spoken. But more importantly, they haven't got enough evidence and proof to take to court right there and then and find you guilty. So what they do is they leave you in for 2-3 days. Then they offer you bail to get out of there. Now, if you accept bail to get out, well, they've got to let you out within 3 days anyway. So under no circumstances, ever, ever, ever accept bail. And if they're trying to force it on you, that's the time, if you do want to speak, and they'll record it, is that I do not consent or accept bail. If you charge me and convict to me, take me to court now and find me guilty right now. Because the limit is 3 days and you're out anyway. So why would you accept bail after almost 3 days to get out, when they've got to let you out anyway?
So that's the kind of last play. If they haven't managed to get your name, address and birthday out of you and things like that, that's the last throw of the dice for them, effectively, isn't it?
It is, mate, and that's why they've not been able to take any action on me when I've been in there. And that's why they do sometimes just let me straight back out, because they know I'm not going to submit to bail and they know I'm not going to speak, and they can't move forward without that.
But It is. I know this is tremendously effective as well, because I had a man on that I was interviewing who was running all manner of underhand stuff. Basically, under he's on the podcast page of Dr. Rock somewhere, and at the moment his name slipped my mind, unfortunately. I know him really well, but I can't remember what he's called. But he told me that when his first wife divorced him, she shopped him for everything because she knew about the whole lot, and she was obviously feeling pretty bitter about it. And he did exactly what you're saying. He just didn't talk to him. And so absolutely nothing was done about any of it. And there was quite a lot of it, I gather. So it's, it sounds like it's a pretty sound technique to me. If a difficult one to play, because we're used to talking, aren't we? We're sociable creatures. We want to talk.
Yeah, absolutely. And they know that. And sometimes they'll fire something really quick at you and it's a natural reaction. And they're trying to have a laugh with you or try and be nice and make it look like, oh, we're trying to get you out of here. We'll get you out of here as fast as possible. Don't worry. You'll get back to your kids. You'll get back to your family. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm.
But this is what I'm saying. And a trick I was just about to tell you that I've only recently found out from a mate of mine. And what it is they want you to sign for bail. Yeah?
Yeah.
They want you to sign to accept bail. And then they can come and arrest you on a warrant if you don't show up at court, because you've just submitted to the police in the court's jurisdiction. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. And what I found out is I never signed for anything. And I've got a mate who got arrested on some stupid driving offence. And what happened is he did sort of thing what I did. And when he came out, he didn't sign for bail. 2 weeks later, and I know this is happening quite a lot now, the police station sent him a letter 2 weeks later after they let him out. I think he went for 2 days. He didn't speak, didn't accept bail. They let him out. 2 weeks later, he gets a letter off the police saying, seeing as though you are under bail, you must attend magistrate's court and blah blah blah. And he went, well, hang on a minute, I've not signed anything. Because now people are waking up not signing stuff, what they're doing is they're circumventing it now, and it's a presumption that they don't need your signature anymore. It's a presumption that you've consented to bail. So what I got him to do is, as soon as he told me, I said, right, I said, tomorrow morning, when he told me this, I told him what to do, and now I got a mate last Saturday or Saturday before, he had his door kicked in and he got arrested and he got back out. Luckily, two of my mates went round and filmed it, and they let him out after half an hour because it was all documented.
He had his door kicked in?
Yeah, the police, he got an unlawful arrest last year, almost a year, last April, and what he's done is he's initiated a court case in High Court, and he's actually taking the police in his city for what they did last April. He's actually taking them to court and suing them. So in order to circumvent that, what's coming up in April, they decided on a trumped up charge to kick his door off on Saturday and take him in there to try and circumvent it. This is how corrupt that's
become. I know. Swearing, excuse me, French.
And because of what happened to my other mate previously, my mate, on Saturday, he knows the game and everything, and he came out and he said, you didn't accept bail? He said, no, I didn't sign anything. I said, hang on a minute. I said, Tony's name. I said, Tony, look, what they're going to do is, they have to wait 14 days. I said, they're going to send you now a letter in 14 days telling you that you've accepted bail and that you're now under jurisdiction. He went, oh, shit. I said, Monday morning, handwrite yourself a notice. I said, take it into that police station, take a witness with you. And I said, make the notice that under no circumstances did you ever consent or agree to any bail conditions or accepting bail in any way, shape or form. Have your mate witness it and hand it in. And if he won't give you a receipt or acknowledge it, your mate is willing to come to court and swear on oath that he saw you deliver that document. And now they can't play that card now, because you have to go and revoke it, otherwise it's a presumption. So that's a good thing to remember as well.
Yeah, that's again very useful. It's fair, a lot of these behaviours of theirs have stayed the same for many, many years, and now they seem to be trying, as I said last time I chatted with you, they seem to be starting to think about it and trying to come up with workarounds, but workarounds just don't do in these circumstances, do they?
No, they don't. Doc, can I just read you this about cops and court tricks, which fits in lovely what we're saying, because I'm just conscious of the time.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, this is something, I've got this information from someone, I also put three quarters of it together myself. If you want to listen back to this on podcast, there's some good points on this. And this is basically how it works. So it's really interesting. And there's about 10, 11 points here, which I've experienced, and people have sent me some stuff and I've checked it out. So this is the process of how cops and courts use the tricks. And if we're wise to it, this is what we can do. So straight away, number one, they'll arrest you before you've had a trial. They'll just come and arrest you. So straight away in their eyes, you're guilty. So they will arrest you before you've had a trial, without an indictment to court, before a jury. So they are breaking the law there. So they'll come and arrest you straight away. Okay.
And as you said last time, they arrest you for non-arrestable offences.
That's the point. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But for non-arrestable offences, okay. They'll keep you locked up for close to the maximum 72 hours, yeah? Okay, they'll bring you before a judge or magistrate, and they'll ask you, how do you plead? Okay, this is the process of what I went through, and what you will go through. Now, if you decide to have a solicitor, or whatever, get this, I've never had one, I never will have one, your bar attorney, whoever he is, tries to coerce you into entering a plea. You listen to this, and I've done this many, many times, you absolutely must not enter a plea. If you enter a plea of guilty or not guilty, you've blown it. And I think I spoke last week, is the clerk to the justices, who calls the shots, tried to enter a plea for me, because if you do not plead, bear in mind, you've been arrested now, you've been let out, and now you're in court, to appear in court. So you're in court. If you plea, you're in trouble. If they try and make a plea for you, and I said last week, just challenge them and say, have you got power of attorney over me? Which they haven't.
And so, you basically say something like, you know, well, I'm not willing to plead because you haven't presented enough evidence for me to know what I'm pleading on.
Exactly. I will not plead because I've not had enough evidence or time with which to defend myself, because they've not submitted all the evidence to you. Mm-hmm. So a bar attorney will try and coerce you if you do have representation, which I never recommend to have. He wants you to plead so he can cut you a deal, because his allegiance is to the bar, not to you. Okay, instead of that, you demand, or you can say, I require, and get this is the bit you just spoke about, Doug. I require to see, or demand, but requires better.
Yeah.
I require to see the verified criminal complaint. Okay, I'll just repeat that for our listeners. Instead, you say, I require to see the verified criminal complaint. Okay, what that means is, it's a non-arrestable offence. Now, a verified criminal complaint means there has to be somebody who's put pen to paper and sworn that you've caused them harm. Now, it's your right to be able to see that. So before you enter a plea, you say, I'm not entering a plea, and actually I require to see the verified criminal complaint. Before I enter any sort of plea, I want to see that. They can never produce it. Only a man or woman that you've harmed can write a verified criminal complaint. It's actually a claim, and they've signed it. Now, really, really important, they cannot prosecute you without one of these. Hence why I didn't get prosecuted. Yeah?
Yeah, very good.
If they do kidnap you and take you to court, and if you do say I'm guilty, if you do plead I'm not guilty or I'm innocent, or whatever you plead, believe it or not, you've just agreed to be prosecuted by making a plea.
I heard it said that the plea is not actually guilty or not guilty, it's guilty or not innocent.
Absolutely, absolutely. So if you do make a plea, then you're agreeing, you've just agreed to be prosecuted, okay? And if you do, they'll just agree to go ahead, because it's under contract now, and you've just agreed to be prosecuted, yeah? Like I said, use the power of attorney thing. I've made notes, and some of them I've already mentioned. Do not accept bail, which is really ball, but I'll go into that another time.
Oh, really? Oh, really? Yeah, I'll make a note of that one. That's for later.
It's ball, B-double-A-L, yeah.
Oh, my God.
I know. This is what's really at the back of all this. So don't accept bail in the police cells. It's your acceptance that you submit to the jurisdiction of the court and police. Make them prosecute you there and then. And like I said, they've not... that bail's the trick to get you out. So I've written some notes out here for this that I'm sending people. The truth is, after that, you are anyway, so why accept bail? And like I said, they may say to you that you've accepted bail at a later date. So the minute you get out, the very next day, go and take that notice in. Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm just reading my notes here. Yeah, notify the police, the police station, hand it in, don't post it, go and take it in with a witness. Notify the police station in writing that as they failed to prosecute you and you did not accept bail, then the matter is now concluded, the matter is now closed, and this is a good line to put, and the accounting is closed. I'll read that again because it's all about money. But as soon as they let you out, the very next day, write your notice, take it into the police station and send your notice in writing saying that seeing as though they failed to prosecute you and as you did not accept bail, then the matter is now closed, sorry, that the matter is now concluded and the accounting is closed. Okay, that means they cannot then operate you on, in any way, shape or form. Yeah?
Perfect.
And that's it, really. I'll just leave it at that for that.
Yep. No, I think that's really helpful. That I'd heard some of those techniques before, but some of that's definitely new to me. What about the birth certificate then?
I'm not going into great detail with the birth certificate, but can I tell you how I think? And now this is not tried and tested, but we are about to do it. I've got a friend of a friend. He's got a court case next week. In 2 weeks' time, and we're going to try this. And this will just close nicely, but I'll be able to speak about the birth certificate and what I've uncovered on our, if you can, and let me on again.
Yeah.
But just let me tell you what happens in magistrates' courts. Excuse me. In fact, it happens in all courts, but leaving criminal where there's an injured party to one side, and I'll try and talk fairly briefly here. All it's about when you go to magistrates' court, and this is it now, is that birth certificate, it's a bond certificate, and all it's about in magistrates' court is accessing that bond. That's all they're interested in. They're not interested whether you drove 78 in a 50 or whether you had your mobile phone in your hand. All that's irrelevant. It's not about justice. The whole thing about getting under jurisdiction is to access that bond because it's worth millions. Okay. The bond certificate that's set up in your surname in capitalisation, what it is it's also a trust. Excuse me. It says on your birth certificate not to be used as identification, yeah, Crown copyrighted. So what's happening is the name, Freeman, the surname in all capitals or whatever, or Mr., the title, is I'm the trustee for that name. And what's happening is when I go into court, they charge me, excuse me, they charge me. And what I'm doing is, if I plead guilty, they'll be lenient, and all it means is it's easy for them to access that bond, which I don't really bother about.
God.
Okay. Yeah, if I say, if I plead not guilty or give them any stick, they can't access the bond. That's why they want that joinder. If you get the joinder, they can access the bond anyway. But they're going to punish you to make it look like it's a court of law. And there's justice there. As soon as you give them joinder, they can access the bond. Now, I've heard that every single trial they earn between 50 and 100,000. I don't know. Can't confirm it. That's for a civil matter in magistrates. So how much are they making just by creating joinder? So as soon as you go in there, if you do submit to their jurisdiction, what's your name? Name, date of birth. Name, address, date of birth. Straight away, you're actually in dishonour because you're trustee for that name. It's not yours. Okay? I mean, you're claiming to be that. So they access the bond immediately. So what I've realised, and I'm conscious of time, 2 minutes, is I found a way where the next time we have a charge, and this chap's going to use it, next time they have a charge, we're going to take along the birth certificate, which I've done before. But this time, it's not very, he'll not get done much, so we're going to try, and I'm going to do it for him, is what I found out is accept the charge, okay? Accept the charge, but don't plead to the crime or the offence. Okay, what that means is the birth certificate is a commercial instrument, a document. It's a species of money that gives them access to that bond. By accepting a charge, if you go down to your shop and buy a loaf of bread, you get charged. Okay, the charge really is to access a charge to access the commerce, the commercial document, the bond. So if you accept the charge, the reason we're getting into trouble is we're keeping hold of that. We're not letting them access the bond, which is theirs to do. We're just trustees for it. So I found a way where you accept the charge, you give them the birth certificate, and they discharge it. Right? Yeah. They get the money that they would have got anyway. But you do not plead guilty or not guilty to the offence. Now, by not resisting their access to that birth certificate, they've got no action. They've got no reason to take any action on you. And I'm guessing this is going to be settled behind closed doors, not in open court. And we're going to put it to them when we get to court before. And I'm sure we're going to go in chambers or backstage. And I'm sure they're going to let us access the bond, so they get their 50 or 100 grand or whatever it is, and the crime and the offence, we don't plead guilty, but we willingly, as trustees, instead of acting as bad trustees, we act as good trustees, and willingly give up access to that bond. Now, based on that, I can't see any way why they won't do it. And last second, If we get a judge or a magistrate to accept that, and this will be for next time, I can't see any reason why we can't pay our mortgage, rent, electricity bills, petrol, whatever, by submitting the commercial instrument that is the birth certificate and let them access our bond that's worth millions.
So accepting all kinds of charge and letting them just have the money?
Absolutely. Every single charge is exactly the same. It's a charge against that trust. We're acting as bad trustees, so let's act as good trustees and discharge any charge that they give us and let them access the bond, because we're never going to see it. And it's their money anyway, let them use it and discharge all debts.
If they're doing it, that means that, they might, we haven't got the money. If they can use it to satisfy the charge, then we don't have to pay.
And we'll never get that money because it's not ours, we're trustees for it, it's theirs.
Right.
So instead of trying to get it, use the facility, the tool, and discharge all debts. And the thing is, if we get a judge or a magistrate to accept it, there's no reason why anybody lower, such as corporations or whatever, there's no reason why they won't accept it. So exciting times, eh?
Oh, that's really brilliant. That's really excellent, actually, Rob. We'll try and get you back in 2 or 3 weeks when you've done that, and we can have a bit more of this, hopefully, because I've really enjoyed myself again.
Doc, can I just have a quick plug? Because if anybody wants any this information or more, can I just give me an email at the station, at our station?
Yeah, please do. Yeah, criticalmassradio.co. Rob Freeman at criticalmassradio.co.uk, because now it's our turn.
Oh, thanks ever so much, Doc.
Very good. Not a problem, Rob. You're listening live to Dr. Ock's radio show on peoplesinternetradio.com. And that was a recording of a conversation I had with Rob Freeman recently. There's plenty more to come where that came from, I think. There'll be hopefully more live chats here and more recordings as well. And, I mean, I'm sure that more things arise as we go along, but certainly still on the slate are ATOS, mortgages, equity, Rob's People's Mandate, which is now the preamble for which is now written up. Hopefully we'll get a chance to talk about that as well. And eventually I'd really like to have a chat with Rob about universal laws, because he's mentioned before the law of intent, but there's many more of them. And also, it might be quite fun to talk about some legal maxims, because he's got some very interesting ones of them as well. But that's all for another night, really. We're coming up to the waking up of the year now, and I've seen the first snowdrop, and the daffodils are coming up, and the Willow Theatre's starting to flower, somewhat bizarrely. So spring is kind of approaching us, and I think it might be a bigger spring than just the seasonal one this year. So I'd like to play a bit more music and then come back with a few thoughts from a lady called Glennie Kindred about the subject of in bulk and the time of year, because when we had Sean Kirwan on the show, Geomancer and Dowser, he was saying that one of the most important things about these turning points of the year, the solstices and equinoxes and the quarter days, is that we take a bit of time to pay attention to them, because that way, plugged into the earth as we are, we can take advantage of the energies that arise therefrom. So I'll be coming back with that in about 10 minutes or so. In the meantime, here's a few more tunes, and the first one's going out to Rob Freeman, and it's Good Morning Judge. You're listening to Dr. Rock's radio show here on peoplesinternetradio.com. We've been listening tonight to Rob Freeman. As you heard, his email address, he's always happy to hear from people, is robfreeman@criticalmassradio.co.uk, and he has his own regular show on that radio station, and there's plenty of podcasts out there. The show is nowadays called Into the Light, and the more archived versions of it were called Out of the Matrix, which brings us very conveniently, really, to the subject of in bulk, because it's a time of rebuilding and renewing. And as we've heard from Rob, he puts down a lot of his success, all of his success, really down to his intent. And as I was saying earlier, when we were listening to Sean, he was saying that there's some times of the year when our intent can be especially placed and be of a special advantage. And we're coming up now, I think generally it's accepted to be February the 2nd, but I suppose it probably moves around a bit. Most of these things do. And Glennie Kindred says of it, she says, here we can use the inner wisdom we have gained during the winter months and bring it out into the active part of the year, the spark of intuition and the intellect of consciousness join together to bring about fertility and growth on all levels. This union, the two aspects of ourselves, creates a magical and fertile time, a time of awakenings and new beginnings, charged with the potency of rising energy, which we experience every spring. But it's my feeling that this is a nice metaphor. That's what I think. I think that there's a general feeling of a rising about the place. She says, our acceptance of winter is giving way to an urge to move forward into springtime energy. Now is the time to prepare inwardly for the changes which will come. Plant your visions and ideas. Leave them to germinate. Bring forth your inner understanding through poetry, song, art and craft work, divination and clairvoyance are potent now as the link with the inner realms remains strong. This is the time for initiation and healing, for reclaiming what has been forgotten. A time for working with your intuition, inspired leaps of faith, expressing your deepest feelings and understanding your own inner wisdom and beliefs. From your unconscious, many things will be revealed to bring understanding of yourself. This is the special energy of Imbolc, which will help you find your way forward. I thought they were really great words. I thought I'd share those with you. I'm planning on spending the remaining half hour of the show or so playing maybe the odd a little clip from a movie or something and some tunes, because as I said at the beginning of the show, I've got a bit of a head on for tunes tonight.